prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adesk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, April 8th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, it's Friday and April 8th and another week until everyone has to have their taxes completed. Unless you file extensions, and so just a reminder there, folks, and gold couldn't extend its gain from yesterday. It tried, but we're looking at 1240 today, 1240, down just a few cents on the New York spot price. Silver was up 13, though, today at 1547. Palladium was up 10 at 971, and we have palladium up 3 at $543. The USDX today is trading, was a little bit stronger earlier in the day, but that reversed 0.28 at 94.21. Crude oil had a good day today, up 2.25. I'm not quite sure what the reason behind that is, but 39.51. I think things in Syria are beginning to heat up a little bit more. They took those hostages, 300 of them at that cement factory yesterday. And, I think they assassinated half of them, I believe. And, there's other things going on in Syria, so I don't think that ceasefire or that whatever's going on is going to remain in place much longer. But we'll just have to see how that bears out. And the stock market didn't bear out very well today. It was up most of the day, triple digits, and but the Dow did manage 35 points to the up. Upside, 17,576. The NASDAQ was up 2 at 48.50. The S&P was up 5 at 2,047. 10-year yield, now that did come up a little bit today, 0.03, not by much, 1.72%. And the euro is still holding that gain at 1.14%. The gap, that fell out of bed today. That was down 14%, as one of the most traded stocks today, down 14% at 23.84. And not a lot of talk about Japan and the European markets. So for the first time in a very long time, Al,
yeah,
the price of mailing a letter is going to fall. For the first time in nearly a century, I think it was 1919, that the price of a postage stamp is dropping. Now, the United States Postal Office is not very happy about it. It's dropping from 49 cents to 47 cents, and it's going to cost $2 billion this year. And they're asking to keep it the same. They're asking to change the rate-setting process so that they can have steeper rate hikes in the future. Certainly, I believe they've lost $5.1 billion in the most recent year when you start accounting for their future expenses, like their pension costs, because they have to prepay those. And so it kind of makes you wonder, why are they cutting? except that they have to after they were allowed to increase it back right after the Great Recession, when the USPS, their losses were getting much worse due to businesses that were cutting back on mailing. So in order to make up for the shortfall, it got permission to increase rates in 2014, which was quite a ways away from the Great Recession, but this is what they tell us. They were able to raise it by 3 cents to that 49 cents. And so the last time that there was a decrease in the price of postage was July 1919, when stamp prices dropped from 3 cents to 2 cents. And this is only the third price decrease on record, going all the way back to the Civil War.
Well, I think President Obama has finally established his legacy. He'll go down in history as the president who actually cut the postage rate by 2 cents per letter.
Hmm. So we'll wait and see how long that lasts. And what they do is when they, I mean, registered and insured mailings, those prices have just skyrocketed. I mean, it's amazing how high those prices are.
You know, it really is interesting from that perspective. I wonder how many letters they actually send anymore that were subject to 49 cent postage, and now they're going to be subject to 47 cents. I mean, mom doesn't write to the kids while they're away at school anymore. I know there's business mail and the rest of it, but I think they're on permits. I kind of wonder if most of their money's not coming out of the two-day mail and registered and so on. Maybe nobody's sending mail anymore. You know, I don't mean no one, of course. I don't mean nobody, but maybe it's down, big deal too. But they did say they expected it would cost them how much money altogether?
$2 billion. $2 billion. When they've already lost it, a $5 billion net loss for the most recent year. So, you know, it is not good. I mean, they're going to have to make that up somewhere. Even if they keep the losses of $5 billion, they have to do something with that $2 billion. What will happen is they'll get their new rate increase, and then it'll go from, 47 cents up to, 53. So, it's just like...
Yeah, it certainly makes you wonder. It's one of those things where you instantly say, what are these people up to? This is a trap, Melody.
Well, it's kind of like what the Federal Reserve is doing with their interest rates. Well, we're going to raise them, so if we get in trouble, we can drop them.
Yeah.
It's just like, but they do. The prices on registered and insured, even their flat rate, they used to have some nice size boxes for their flat rate. Well, the boxes got smaller and smaller because you could flat rate a box no matter what you put in and no matter the weight. You just got the flat rate box. So they use the flat rate. We use the flat rate boxes when we send registered and insured. But once you tack on that registered and insured shipping and the weight for silver, I mean, it's, one of the least expensive boxes is, you know, probably around $21-$22. That's where it starts, and that's just for like a tube of Silver Eagles. So it's very expensive.
Got something here from KC Daily Dispatch. An article entitled "Move Your Money Underground Before Global Bank Runs Begin." It's getting harder to pull your money out of the bank. J.P. Morgan Chase recently made a major change to how it handles cash. Non-customers can now only withdraw $1,000 a day from J.P. Morgan Chase ATMs. Mm-hmm. The change applies to 18,000 ATMs nationwide. This begs the question, do you really own the money in your bank? If so, why can a bank say no when you ask for it? Huh? But the truth of the matter is, the answer to the question is no, you don't own the currency that's in the bank. All right? I've been saying so for years, 15 anyway, that you don't even own the money in your wallet. Yeah. Can I prove it? Yes, I can. It's logical, and it's obvious if you care to consider it. Suppose I loaned a car to my friend Bob and let him drive it around for the next 6 months. Everyone would start to say, that's Bob's car. But because I loaned the car to Bob, in truth, it would still be my car. Okay? I would be the owner of the vehicle while Bob was merely using it. And in fact, I could take that car back from Bob anytime I wanted. I could stop over when he could be in the bar getting drunk, and I could pull up, get a friend to drive me down there, take my spare key, start up the car, and Bob, when he comes out, the car is gone. Has it been stolen? No, because I own the car. I loaned it to Bob, which means I still own it. Bob gets to use it, but I own it. Now apply that same principle of lending automobiles to the fact that virtually all modern fiat currency is loaned into circulation. How do those $100 bills in your wallet get there? And the answer is initially the Federal Reserve loaned them into circulation. Right? That means whoever loaned the green pieces of paper in your wallet still own it, all right? Even if it's in your bank account or your wallet, you don't own that currency because it was loaned into circulation. Historically, what the government used to do, they'd coin money. People would go out and find gold. They'd find silver. They'd bring the ore to the mint. The mint would assay the ore. They'd melt it down into little discs, one-ounce discs, and then they'd hit it with a machine that would put an impression on it, and it would be coined, right? And it would be essentially certified. It was the government's way of certifying that this is 1 ounce of gold. There were some other alloys in there, but 1 ounce of pure gold plus some alloys. If I were a miner, if I were a prospector, I find some gold, I take it to the mint, and the mint charges me something to turn it into coins, and then they give it back. It's my gold, and I can spend it however I like. And when you had some of that gold, you could spend it however you liked. You owned the gold. We the people own the gold. Government came in and said, no, we're gonna help you. We're here to help you. And we're going to set up a system where instead of using that nasty old gold, we're going to use paper. And it'll be just pretty colors and interesting anti-counterfeiting measures and so on. But here's the problem. All of these interesting green pieces of paper are loaned into circulation, which means you get to use them, but you don't own them, which is one of the reasons and probably the principal reason why the government can seize money in the bank accounts. It's not really your money. Banks are essentially agencies of the federal government. The government says, take our money back. Bank is going to do that. It's not yours. You understand? It may even, I won't go so far as to say this is true, but I strongly suspect it's true. It may also have a lot to do with why you have to pay income tax. You're using someone else's currency. You don't own the currency that you're being paid in, that you're using to pay your rent, pay your mortgage, and buy yourself a new flat screen TV, computer, car, whatever. You're using someone else's currency in the same sense that my friend Bob was using my car that I loaned him. It's only fair that maybe I charge Bob. Yeah, I'll loan you the car, but I still want $50 a day. How about that? For Linda, car costs a lot of money. It's worth it. Bob should be paying me. Why? Because it's my car. Same thing with this, with your currency. This is an important point for people to understand. It is loaned into circulation. It used to be it was spent into circulation, or it was made privately and merely coined, certified that this was a legitimate one else. But it was not loaned into circulation. The stuff we have today is loaned into circulation. You don't own it. Government can take it whenever they want. It's part of the reason why they control how much currency you get to handle. Why? It's not yours. They control how much currency you can withdraw from your bank. Why? It's not yours. All right? So, Casey Dispatch, they pose the musical question, this begs the question, do you really own the money in your bank? If so, why can a bank say no when you ask for it? And the answer is no, you don't. You don't own it. You don't own, again, you don't even own the money in your wallet. And there are legal implications of this that are fantastic, and I'm not going to get into them today. But in any case, Mr. Casey, we do not own the currency in our wallet or our bank accounts, and therefore it's subject to being taken by whoever loaned it into circulation in the first place. They own it. What's next, Modi?
Well, the American Silver Eagle for this year so far have sold almost 16 million Silver Eagles in 3 months and basically 1 week here in April. If it stays to the tune of these numbers, you're looking at about 60 million 1 ounce Silver Eagles for the year, if it stays on track of what we've seen in the first 3 months. And that's exceeding, you know, the record of last year by 15 million. I mean, once we get a little bit further into
that's
the year,
that's huge.
We're 4 million more than we were last year about this time. So, I mean, there's been an incredible demand for American Silver Eagles, and Silver Eagles aren't even taking a breather this year from the first month where January sold almost 6 million. A little distortion because of January, I mean, because of December and the changeover from year to year. But both February and March did extremely well, with February at 4.7 million and March at 4.1 million. So it's exciting. It's exciting. There's a huge demand for silver. And the big question is, well, if there's such a big demand, then why isn't the price of silver rising? Well, because the availability is there. There's no bottleneck in receiving Silver Eagles. There's no premiums have dropped. People are taking advantage of the premiums on Silver Eagles because we don't have that bottleneck that we had at the end of 2015 that we have in every year. And even last year in July and August, we had a huge bottleneck that pushes prices up. But it'll happen again. The prices will rise. The fundamentals are there. And you just have to be patient.
You know, one of the things that's interesting to me about this is it's happening pretty much the same time while the government is trying to get rid of cash. People are getting more silver coins at the same time government's trying to get rid of cash. I wonder how many people are buying the silver coins simply because they anticipate the cash will disappear, and in order to maintain privacy in transactions, maybe they'll try to proceed with silver. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and the program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
As every day, I'm going to remind the listeners to visit our website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. And, of course, we've got some great specials going on here at Discount Gold and Silver. If you want to add some Silver Eagles to your portfolio, we got some great buys on them, very low premiums on our Silver Eagles. And if you want to be part of that $60 million for the year of 2016, let's see if we – it would be fantastic. It would be something that certainly would be discussed. And I think eventually folks are going to need it in your portfolio. And we talk about it all the time, and we're not going to go into it right now. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about the U.S. economy. But we got some – you know, if you need to accumulate to your portfolio, as you can accumulate. Now's the time to get them at these low prices, and these still are low prices for both gold and silver.
Got an article from CNN Money. The headline's Red Flag. U.S. economy may have hit the pause button. All right, it says economists have dramatically cut their forecasts for U.S. economic growth in the first quarter of 2016. Falling car sales, equipment purchases by businesses, and a downward revision to consumer spending have darkened the view. The Atlanta Federal Reserve's forecast for the first quarter growth is now 0.4%, a massive dial down from 2.5% that they forecast in mid-February. We've gone from mid-February to mid-March, and we're into April, but we're really talking about a month and a half, and their forecast has fallen from 2.5% to 0.4%. That's a sixth. They are calculating that the forecast from mid February has declined by 5/6. Bank of America's economists recently cut their forecast. What happened here? I just lost something for a second. From 2% to 0.6%. All right. Wells Fargo slashed estimates from 1.4% to 0.1%, which is next to nothing. In March, total car sales fell by 1 million to 16.9 million, dimming hopes that consumers were starting to spend. Small business optimism has hit the lowest point in 2 years, and American manufacturers are facing headwinds from the weak global economy. Earlier this year, fears of a U.S. recession grew, only to die down by mid-February and March. Those fears may now be ratcheting up again, as consumers and business owners seem to be in a pause mode before opening up their purse strings. What do you think, Melody? Is we ain't on the verge of another bout of admitted recession?
The key there is admitted recession. We've never came out of the ones that we've had probably for, 30 years. But, it's make-believe. It's like being a little kid again. We could make believe that things are good. We could make believe that if you want to play the game and think that things are better, and hopefully they're better for some and for many. But I think as a nation as a whole, we don't have, it's not the fairy tale that was spoken of when we were children now, when we were kids, and a lot of dreams, and people certainly have found it much harder to make a living. There's economists. They're already shaving off a forecast of on the weak growth from a week ago to today. I mean, earlier in the week they were looking at a little bit higher number. I think a 0.4% estimate earlier in the week. The Atlanta Fed GDP, JP Morgan economists are now forecasting the economy only expanded by 0.2% in the first quarter. So
we don't know for a fact what's happened in the first quarter.
No. Mm-hmm.
Will we know for a fact, Melody? For a fact, when will we know?
July.
not that soon.
After they revise it after three times.
Probably.
Then we'll know.
When you see St. Peter, you could ask him, and he's, those people lied. If you want to know what it really was, first part, here's what it really was. St. Peter will tell us. I don't think we'll get the truth. Will we get the truth in this life?
The first GDP number actually comes out later on in this month, about the end of the month, I think around April 28th. And, of course, they can revise it down. According to a CNBC study, the average error rate since 1990 in government quarterly GDP reports was plus or minus 1.3%. So, whatever the number they can come out, It could be higher. It could be lower. I mean, it's really ridiculous because you have so many things that are based on, you know, these numbers. People invest and, you know, if you believe it's true, I'm sure.
So what does that tell you that you should be doing if you're investing?
You do the opposite of what they tell you.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true, but it probably is.
What I'm
going with it is this. The truth of the matter is none of us can really count on the numbers that are produced on a regular basis short term. What did we hear for the numbers for today? What did we hear for the numbers for this week? What have we heard for the numbers for the first quarter? Well, what are we anticipating for the next quarter? Because these numbers have been frequently falsified, and it appears to many that this isn't just a mistake. This has been done intentionally in order to create a rosier picture than may in fact be reality. What you want to do, you want to, instead of responding to the rumor du jour or the fictional unemployment rate, today, oh my gosh, look what happened to the unemployment rate. I don't know what did happen to it. We don't really know what happened to it. And I'm not sure when we're going to find out, which takes us back. What if you can't look at these day-to-day numbers exactly and rely on them to make investment decisions? They are something you should consider. I'm not saying they shouldn't be considered, but if there's any doubt in your mind, you want to look at fundamentals. What do the fundamentals tell you? And you have to take a longer-term view on your investments, because what's happening today and tomorrow and Monday and so on, there is just a surprising amount of volatility. I mean, what does it prove that today the price of gold went down a few cents? What's it prove? Anything? What does it prove that it went up, what was it, $13 yesterday? Went down 9 before, up 10 or 11 the day before that. It's up and down like a yo-yo. So what can you do in an environment where fundamentals dominate? And the reason for the fundamentals is not clear. Excuse me. Not fundamentals dominate, where day-to-day prices are dominating, and the reason for those price changes are not clear. What do you do? You got to take a longer-term view. You have to sit back and realize, this week was interesting. What's it prove?
Well, that's exactly what I talked about yesterday. When you look at the fundamentals, you want a long-term investment. If you want to speculate and keep part of your funds and be diversified, that's fine. But get it insured. You know, bring some, so when it fluctuates, you have something it's like a seesaw effect, where you get the seesaw effect. And I'm not talking on a day-to-day basis, but over a period of time, you get that seesaw effect. And that's what protects you. And that's what people don't understand, why they don't want to be heavy all in paper. And you have to understand what exactly is balancing, you know, your seesaw, your portfolio. You know, I mean, yeah, having all paper is not balancing your portfolio. Having you know, mining shares and oil shares and, you know, maybe pharmaceuticals and all in your portfolio, it's not balancing your portfolio. You might have different investments, but it doesn't balance your portfolio. So there's lessons, and people have to pay attention. We talked about pension plans, and we were talking about, how rules change for corporate pension plans since 2014 that was written into the transportation bill. And some of those changes expire this year. So it'll be interesting to see what effects it has when it comes to these corporations reporting their underfunded liabilities on these pension plans. So because you will see a difference. We'll follow that story and keep you posted as we, as we can find, I actually went back to look for some, pension news and so forth and whatnot. I'll tell you what, to find the information anymore. Everything I was finding, it was like from the 90s and early, or, you know, the early years of 2000, it was like, and they really have suppressed the numbers to find these reports, to dig around. There is a big difference in what you can find even on the internet, than what you could, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Well, I don't have a comment for that, but I do have one for balancing my portfolio, Melody. I try to get half of my paper debt instruments are printed in black ink and half are printed in dark blue. Does that constitute balancing?
In your mind, probably.
Mm-hmm. Got another one for you. You know, people get into the speculation. And we can talk about the difference between speculators and investors. And the fundamental idea is investors are in it for the long haul. All right? Speculators are in it for how much can I make this afternoon? I got a stock tip. You understand? I can get into General Motors today and it's going to go up 25 cents per share and I'll be able to clean up by the end of the day. I make 25 cents on every share I bought. If I bought, who knows, 100,000 shares, blah, blah, blah. Make a lot of money. Have enough money to take a vacation, whatever. That's speculation. If short-term investing is speculation, long-term investing is, in fact, investing. All right, and in long-term is going to be based on fundamentals where speculation is moving according. What's the market doing right now? What's the market doing right now? Long-term says, what are the fundamentals? One of the reason I bring that up, remind, we've said it 100 times probably in this program. I don't know if we've said it that many, but we have. But another story I've told on this program, an anecdote, a number of times. But back in the 50s, maybe the early 60s, but I was no more than in high school, and I remember this clearly, read an article that explained they did a survey on hardcore gamblers, people who were habitual gamblers, and they set up a casino and they would bring people in and they could play slot machines and roulette wheels and whatever. They had most of the games that you can find in a casino in Las Vegas. And what they did is they could change the rate of winning on these games. You could start pulling on that one-armed bandit, and maybe you could make a nickel for every dollar you put in there, or they could adjust the payout rate where instead you were winning. You're actually winning on the machine. And what they discovered is that the hardcore gamblers, once they started winning on a regular basis, they lost interest in the game and they quit. And there was a profound lesson in that I understood then. This is 50 years ago. The gamblers play to lose. Not absolutely all of them, but most of them are playing to lose. Right? Now, the same thing strikes me as true with the stock market speculators. They're essentially involved in gambling. They're betting because it's short term, they're betting what's the next card going to come up. Is it going to be a jack or an ace, a spade or a club? They're betting on that next turn of the card. And if they would bet right, they can make a lot of money. And if they do, it makes them extraordinarily enthusiastic. Oh, my God, did you see how much money I made? I can do this again. I can do it again. And they will bet. And they're like a guy who's shooting craps, and he's rolled seven, six times in a row. And he knows, he knows he can do it seven times in a row. Well, sooner or later he gets to that roll where he can't, and then it's all lost. And the point behind this, there's a lesson here, or at least an implication. People who speculate are gambling. People who gamble are playing to lose. Investors are playing to win, all right? Take a look at the fundamentals, take a long-term perspective, and be prepared to sit down and hang on to whatever you've invested in. Hold on tight. We're going to take a break for some more commercial announcements, and Melody and I will return in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Here's an interesting article from the Washington Times, and it goes to values and what's happening in the world. You know, some people, I suppose every generation, complains that the newer generations don't have the same sense of values that we had when we were kids. I don't think there's anything unusual about that, that complaint. I'm sure that people have been, there were Neanderthals back in the Stone Age. You were in their own ways, and what's wrong with that kid?
Yeah, but it was a lot different when we were the kids.
But people do have, there's just a shift in values. And the headline, Washington Times, Pope Francis insists conscience, not just rules, must lead faithful. That's the headline. And what he's saying is you got to decide for yourself. Your conscience will decide whether or not you should or should not do something. You don't have to be bound up by silly old things like, he didn't say this
like
precisely, but this is, yeah, like the Bible or the Ten Commandments or something. That's passé. I mean, this is... This report, this is like Father Guido Sarducci. Some of you may remember him from back in the 60s or 70s. He was a comedian, all right? Came across as a Catholic priest, and Father Guido Sarducci. And it's like he shaved his head, got rid of his beard and his sideburns, and now he's Pope Francis. So Pope Guido said Friday that Catholics should look to their own consciences rather than rely exclusively on church rules to negotiate the complexities of sex, marriage, and family life, demanding the church shift emphasis from doctrine to mercy and confronting some of the thorniest issues of the faithful. In a major church document entitled, I mean, this is almost too bizarre. A major church document entitled The Joy of Love. I can remember they had a book that was entitled The Joy of Sex. Maybe in the 60s, probably in the 70s. It was radical, The Joy of Sex. Oh my gosh, people were putting it out on their coffee tables or whatever. It was a radical. And here comes the Pope, The Joy of Love. I don't know. Is that just a coincidence? But in any case, in this document, Pope Francis made no explicit change in church doctrine and upheld church teachings on the lifelong bond of marriage between a man and a woman. But in selectively citing his predecessors and emphasizing his own teachings in strategically placed footnotes, Pope Francis made innovative openings and a pastoral practice for Catholics who civilly remarry. Right? What is an innovative opening, Melody? It's a violation of the Bible. It says, oh, wait, we got 10 commandments? We got an 11th, maybe a 12th coming to you, you know? And signaled that he wants nothing short of a revolution in the way priests guide ordinary Catholics in their spiritual life. He said the church must no longer sit in judgment and throw stones at those who fail to live up to the gospel's ideals of perfection in marriage and family life. So we've got a little bit of, if it feels good, do it here. The article continues. It says, on thorny issues such as contraception, Francis stressed that a couple's individual conscience, educated in church teaching, and not just dogmatic rules imposed on them across the board from above, as in from God, must guide their decisions and the church's pastoral practice. I'm not Catholic, but I've respected the Catholics for having a system of values that they were willing to stand up for. I didn't want to be Catholic in the rest of that, but I recognize these people had a pretty strict code. Not all of them, but most of them. They seemed to have something, you know. Now, Pope Guido's new innovations seem to say, if it really feels good, I don't mean if it's just good, if it really, really feels good, then what the heck? Why not? Let's do it. And in doing so, the Catholic faith appears to be losing some of its values. And it seems to be devolving from a strict church into something that's more like a permissive frat house. Huh? So what do you think, Melody? Is the Catholic Church, is Pope Francis leading them in a good direction here? Or?
Oh, I agree with you. I'm not Catholic, and when I was a child, my father was Catholic, and my brother was baptized Catholic, but I was not. The Archbishop, who leads 2.3 million Catholics in Chicago, he praised the document as liberating. Well, that it is.
Yeah, I know.
And he said the Pope was calling pastors and believers to an adult spirituality. And an adult, I mean, it's, but this is just part of signs of the times. April 19th, in New York, Times Square. I think I sent you the information. And in London, they're worshiping.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. The portals to the Temple of Baal.
Yeah.
And it's allegedly happening in a number of cities.
Well, two that I know of.
No, allegedly a couple dozen where this is allegedly happening.
They're
going to set up portals that are copied after the entrance to a Temple of Baal, which is anti-Christian, anti-God, arguably satanic. They're allegedly going to be set up in a number of cities. In the next little
April
while.
19th. April 19th.
April 19th.
And it's all going to happen at the same time.
I
mean, it's not the, you know, the time differences and so forth. Oh, well, London's going to do theirs at, you know, 12 noon and the New York will do. No, it's a coordinated. And it's so when you put all this together, it's.
And it's hard for people to understand, and it's hard to believe unless you are part of whatever movement is putting the Baal temple doors up. You know, there was a documentary years ago about life on one of the islands out in the Pacific where they've studied evolution for a long time. Charles Darwin, Easter Island. No, maybe not Easter Island. I can't think of the name of the island in the Pacific. But they have lizards and they have birds. And the birds lay eggs. And they have a rookery where all the birds get together. And they are all just, everyone has its own nest laying there on the ground. And they are all of the nests are just precisely spaced where they're just out of reach, where you can't, where a bird sitting on the nest can't quite peck at any of the other birds in the adjacent nests, all right? But they're close, right? These nests are close. And if any of the birds cross another bird's territory, oh, they're all on them, and they're all pecking at this albatross or whatever it is that she's trying to get to his nest and bring some food to the baby birds and the rest of that sort of thing, and all the rest of the birds, bang, 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 peck at it, peck at it, peck at it. They're worried about each other, but whenever they abandon the nest, they step away or whatever, there are lizards that come up and steal the eggs out of the nests, and the birds just sit there and look at them. And they just seem to be saying, well, don't that beat all? Did you see what it, that lizard just took my eggs? Huh, how about that? They spend all of their energy pecking at other birds that should be their friends. And they don't even realize when the lizards are coming in. They don't pay no attention. It doesn't disturb them. They could stop the lizards, but the lizards just wander around like the Invisible Man. Well, people are like that. There are things that happen in this world where we're so busy fighting with our neighbors and our family members and employees and employers and the rest of that sort of thing. We don't really catch what's going on. We don't follow that the lizards, or you could say politicians if you wanted to, or you might say Satanists or shysters or treasonous whores, you got a bunch of different, but the lizards are helping themselves to our eggs. And we're not doing anything to stop it. And it seems odd when you see birds that don't bother stopping real lizards out there on the Pacific Islands. But we do the same thing. And it is very strange. It's very hard to understand who your true adversaries are. We are easily motivated to fight with people that really, all they're trying to do is get by. All right? I'm not saying everybody's saintly and the rest of that, but we wind up spending too much of our energy fighting with people of another race, another religion, while the lizards are stealing the eggs out of our nests. And it's partly because we're foolish, it's partly because the lizards are smart enough to give us something to fight with.
Mm-hmm. They're patient. Mm-hmm. Federal judge in California has ruled that including a small Christian cross on their official seal of the Los Angeles County is unconstitutional, siding with the civil liberties advocates. You know, this was a decision yesterday. It was a two-year battle, and it was handed down by the U.S. District Judge Christina Snyder. And so, you know, these are just one of those little signs. These are, you know, the birds, you know. And The county seal of Los Angeles, it appears on flags, on government buildings across the county, and now they all have to be removed. So where's the people that are fighting to keep this on? I've given this story. I lived in Missouri in a little town. I think the town, if I remember correctly, was Republic and Missouri. They had the little fish. Didn't even represent a Christian. It wasn't on there because of the Christian symbol. It was on there because of fishing in the Ozarks.
Well,
one person viewed it as a religious symbol. And one person.
Well, and we can't have that, Melody.
Nobody fights it, and they had to remove it from, you know, from all the little city's stationery and everything else.
It's
like they do one little town at a time until they get to the larger towns. And but as you said, it's, you know, these lizards just come in and they change things, and everybody else is so busy.
And we don't understand the significance of it. We don't understand the value of some of these changes. We see them, you know, the same way people look at money, they just count it. We don't really understand the underlying significance and how one little defeat after another little defeat after another little defeat, and all of a sudden, you are no longer the nation that you grew up in. You're no longer in the nation that you expected to live in. And people look around and they say, what happened? What happened? What happened is too many of us spent too much time watching Dancing with the Stars and the American Idol and so on. And we're all guilty of it. I'm not, you know, it's a pot calling the kettle black when I'm talking about this, but just the same. We have to find people who are willing to stand up and speak out. You don't have to shoot people. You don't have to bomb people. But you do have to stand up, show up, and speak out in favor of whatever values you think are appropriate for you and your family. And all we ever seem to see are dissidents, minorities, new immigrants. They're willing to stand up and fight for what they want in this country. Why won't the people who were born here, live here? Why won't we fight for the... And the answer is we've been conditioned not to. We've been taught and we've believed so many things that, oh, it's a hate speech. If you're white and you're Christian and you stand up and say something, that's hate speech. No, it's not. It's not about what you hate. It's about what you love. You know, love and hate, two sides of the same coin. When they say that you can't say things because it's hate speech, what they're really saying is you can't say things because it's love speech. Right? One man's hate is another man's love. And we've lost sight of that, and we allow ourselves to be intimidated by people in positions of power and institutions, and they try to tell us, you know, you can't do that, you can't say that, you can't do a bunch of things. Well, maybe you gotta say it. Maybe despite what they would have you believe, it's not only true that you can say, it's true that you must say. We're out of time, Melody.
And I just want to say, and they've done that to your finances, and they've done that to our money system. Mm-hmm. So, but people do have an option. They can choose, or you can choose to do nothing.
All right, folks, we're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. Have a good weekend. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? There never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's true.